Eddie, I can handle this, swear to God. Also, I want to take a few pictures of Mr. E.T. before he rots away to nothing but stone crab soup.
Quit it, George said. He was looking a little green. Sorry.
I'll be out in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. Go on now, you guys. Take care of your subject.
Eddie was staring at the Buick, standing there on its big, smooth, white wall tires. Its trunk opened so its ass end looked like the front end of a crocodile.
I hate that thing, he said. For 2 cents.
George was heading for the door by then, and Eddie followed without finishing what he'd do for 2 cents. Wasn't that hard to figure out anyway.
The smell of the decaying creature was getting worse by the minute, and I remembered the puff pack Curtis had worn when he'd come in here to investigate the plant that looked like a lily. I thought it was still in the hutch. There was a Polaroid camera, too, or had been the last time I looked.
Very faint from the parking lot, I heard George calling to Shirley, asking if she was all right. She called back and said that she was. A second or two later, Eddie yelled, "Fuck!" at the top of his voice. Another country heard from. He sounded pissed like a bear. I figure his prisoner, probably high on drugs and with a broken nose to boot, had upchucked in the back of Unit 6. Well, so what? There are worse things than having a prisoner blow chunks in your ride. Once, while I was assisting at the scene of a 3-car collision over in Patchen, I stashed a drunk driver who caused it all in the back of my unit for safekeeping while I set out some road flares. When I returned, I discovered that my subject had taken off his shirt and taken a shit in it. And then he used one of his sleeves as a squeeze tube. Now, you have to imagine a baker decorating a cake to get what I'm trying to describe here. He wrote his name on both side windows in the back. He was trying to do the rear window, too, only he ran out of his special brown icing. When I asked him why he wanted to do such a nasty, goddamn thing, he looked up at me with that cockeyed hauteur only a long-time drunk could manage and said,
"It's a nasty goddamn world, trooper."
Anyway, I didn't think Eddie yelling was important, and I went back to the hutch where we kept our supplies without bothering to check on him. I was more than half convinced the puff pack would be gone, but it was still on the shelf, wedged between the box of blank videotapes and a pile of Field and Stream magazines. Some tidy soul had even tucked it into a plastic evidence bag to keep the dust off. Taking it down, I remembered how crazy Kurt had looked on the day I first saw him wearing this gadget. Kurt also wearing a plastic barber smock and a blue bathing cap and red galoshes. "You're beautiful. Wave to your adoring fans," I told him. I put the mask to my mouth and nose, almost sure what would come out would be unbreathable, but it was air all right. Stale as weak old bread, but not actually moldy, if you know what I mean. Better than the stench in the shed, certainly. I grabbed the battered old Polaroid one-shot from the nail where it was hanging by the strap. I backed out of the hutch and... this could be nothing but hindsight. I'll be the first to admit it. I think I saw movement. Just a flash of movement. Not from the vicinity of the shed, though, because I was looking right at that. This was more of a corner-of-the-eye phenomenon. Something in our backfield. In the high grass. I probably thought it was Mr. Dillon, maybe rolling around trying to get that thing's smell off. Well, it wasn't. Mr. Dillon wasn't up to rolling around by then. By then, poor old D was busy dying.